we do bands, we do DJs, we do national acts, we do speed painters, character artists. We do the craziest things. If you think it, we've got it. And if we don't have it, we'll find it. We will not disappoint. That is our promise and commitment to everyone.
And have a freezing day.
Hi, this is Cindy Jervich, owner of Breezin Entertainment and Productions. Today on Breezin Chats, I'm joined with my executive team, Jesse Wilcox and Michael Jervich. Today, we are going to be chatting with one of our Breezin magazine Behind the Hustle contributing writers, Whitney Holtzman of Social Victories. We will be discussing Whitney's journey of how she got started in social media and marketing industry and have her share some stories of what it is like owning her own company. We will also talk about one of my mentors and Whitney's old boss, Gary Vee. Whitney is a passionate go-getter who is founder and CEO of Social Victories. Social Victories is a social media and marketing consulting company for the leaders in the sports world. She currently has clients across all pro sports, including the NFL, MLB, and AAF. Whitney oversaw the digital and social media platforms for Rise, Ross Initiative in Sports for Equality, which uses the power of sports to promote racial equality, and also help launch ESPNW, ESPN Women's Incentive Initiative. Whitney's pivot into the marketing and world came when she met Gary Vanderchuk and landed at his marketing agency, where she ran the social and digital strategy for a variety of brands. Avanner Media. She also has consulted startups, Fortune 100 companies, sports franchises on digital branding and strategy with a focus on social media and emerging technology. We'd like to welcome you and thank you for coming and super excited to have you as our guest on Breezin Chats.
Welcome, Whitney.
Yay, Whitney.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys feel like family, and just for Cindy, I wore my Gary V Legacy Over Currency shirt.
Thank you. In honor of you, because I know you're such a big fan.
I like that. I haven't seen that one yet. She talks about it all the time, Gary V stuff.
Yeah, she still has to get those shoes.
You talked about ordering those.
Now I need to get his wine.
Well, I think that wine, now you're talking my language.
Because I owe it to him. Personally, you owe it to me.
Well, I mean, 4 years of listening to his podcast and reading his books, I think you owe him a little something.
A little shout out? Okay. I think we'll get the empathy wine.
I think you're almost at my level for being the biggest Gary Vee fan in Tampa. You're pretty close.
Pretty close. Well, when I met Whitney, we were at a women's working luncheon over on the Starship. And she goes, yeah, I really do know Gary. She broke out pictures, and I'm like, oh my God, you really do.
He's actually real. I actually see a picture of him.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that day you handed me your Twitter, and you were like, log in, tweet, let's go.
Show me how to do that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
You could tell you were super passionate. You were ready to get it going right on the Starship.
Right on it. So thanks again. I really appreciate it. I know you're super busy. You've been traveling around a lot. We're so excited to hear about where you're going and where you've been. And I just love the spirit that you have and your passion. So I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And I feel like both of us represent that you can have your dreams come true while living where you want to live, because obviously we're both here in Tampa and it's such an amazing place to live and high quality of life. And, you know, everyone you meet kind of feels like a family. And I think we both kind of show that you can have the dream job, you know, in your dream city as well.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great point.
Well, I want to kind of get to know you from like the humble beginnings. Like, where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? What did you study in college? I want to know everything from the kind of like the beginning, a little bit about yourself.
So I was born.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. That was the first time.
Yeah.
Thanks, parents.
No eggs hatching here.
Exactly. So, grew up in Tampa, actually off of West Shore, and my parents still have the same house that I was born in. The room they brought me home from the hospital is still, like, my bedroom.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's great. It's funny. Now they call it the guest room, and I'm like, no, it's all We're not rebranding this here. It's always my room.
I'm not rebranding my room.
Yeah. So, grew up here. Then I went to University of Florida. And I had an amazing experience there. It was really the first time that I learned about different industries that really seemed like a fit for me. For example, I got to major in journalism. I had a concentration in sports management. And I was there during all of sort of the championship years and the Tebow era. From the time I got accepted To the time I graduated, we had two football and two baseball championships, excuse me, two football and two basketball championships.
Very cool.
And Tim Tebow won the Heisman, and everyone said, you were there at an amazing time.
I'm yeah.
like, listen,
it was the best time for Florida fans. Yeah.
I'm like, I got there and they got good, and then I graduated and they left. So I'm not saying it had anything to do with
that. I'm just,
yeah. Just, yeah.
Now, when you said journalism, when you went to college, were you one of those people like, I know what I'm going to study?
So it's interesting. When I was growing up, I told my parents I wanted to be the sideline reporter on Monday Night Football, and both of them are attorneys, and my brother just graduated law school. So already I was sort of either the black sheep or the one who got away, unclear. But they said, do you think you could pick a job with more than one opening? And I said, well, I'll also do Sunday Night Football, which is doubled my options. And they're like, probably great. We're going to have to support her the whole rest
right.
of the but, you know,
payroll.
Yeah, I grew up going to Bucks games every Sunday with my dad. And I became so passionate, so into the games. Like, sometimes I, like, would get so nervous if it was a close game, I'd have to, like, watch the end of the game from the bathroom because I was, like, or, like, turn away from the TV because I get so nervous and so into it. And I just knew that, you know, what I loved doing when I didn't want to do homework or other school-related things was my escape was watching football. And I thought, well, you know, if life is short and you have to do something all day, every day, well, might as well be something that you love. So that's kind of how I decided that I wanted to go into sports reporting. And I always tell kids kind of, you know, reach for the moon and you'll land among the stars. I went with the knowledge I had at the time, and that was the dream job for me. So I kind of pursued, you know, that path when I got to college. And I mean, when I was in school, social media wasn't even invented yet. So, like, I also tell kids, you know, if you don't know what you want to do, it's okay because your job might not exist yet. But
yeah, I think we only had, like, MySpace then at that point. I think that's the one thing everybody had because Facebook hadn't come around yet.
Exactly. Yeah, and definitely no Instagram or anything.
Yeah.
So the closest thing to what I absolutely loved doing was talking about sports and talking to people. So to me, that was sports broadcasting. And so that's how I decided to pursue a journalism career when I got to Florida. Yeah.
And then what changed along the way?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So I had internships the summers of college with the Tampa Bay Rays, Turner Sports, and ESPN. And I actually...
All the head sports companies.
Yes,
there.
I started small. and when I applied for the internship at ESPN, I got really lucky because they only had 50 spots and they had filled them all. And the person I interviewed with fought three people and created a 51st spot. So, you know, yeah, you can be sort of as talented or, you know, be as passionate as you'd like, but you really need amazing, selfless people to open the door for you. And he was that for me. So I got the internship my junior year and actually went up to the headquarters in Bristol and was making highlights for SportsCenter and Baseball Tonight. And I could call home and say, at 11:17 p.m. the highlight I made is going to air on ESPN. So
wow, what an amazing experience.
That is so cool.
It really was.
To give interns like a real hands-on opportunity versus like, here, file this stuff. And like,
so one person gave you that break.
Exactly.
That's
right.
Amazing.
And really, day one, we had rookie camp. And after that, they gave us all a job that already existed within the company. So you were an intern for the first day. And after that, you know, for example, I was called a production assistant. That was, you know, a category of jobs that people had, you know, within the company. So they let us have, you know, the most real world experience and gave, you know, put a lot of trust in us to give us these sort of amazing positions when we were at the company.
Well, that's probably why it was such a competitive internship, too, because they really wanted people who they could trust and that were mature enough to handle that type of responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And they had done a partnership with the SEC network at the time. And so they picked one kid from every SEC school. So considering how many passionate sports fans there are that come from Florida, I was very lucky to get selected. Yeah. So that was great. And then when I was there, I had this idea that they should name the Spanish channel Espanol. I was like, why is no one else? I was like, this is genius. So I went ahead and emailed John Skipper, who was the president of the entire company. And, you know, I was an intern at the time, so I guess fearless, but they really encouraged interns. They said some of their best ideas at the company had come from interns. So
I believe it.
Yeah, they really believed in us and encouraged us to express our ideas. So I just emailed him, and he was like, well, no, but you should come meet with me. So I did. And while I was there, he told me they were starting ESPN, this women's initiative. And I thought, well, I already have a W necklace on. I've got the gear. I'm ready to go. So you know, at the time, everyone had told me, if you want to work at ESPN, you have to start somewhere very small, a small town in Kansas, and sort of work your way up. And then maybe after 20 years, you might get a job at ESPN. And it was the first time I kind of said, well, just because everyone else does it that way, why can't I be the first to carve out my own path? And I didn't know what the word entrepreneurial was, and certainly didn't, you know, really know that you could start your own company one day. I just knew that that whole way of doing things seemed slow and archaic and didn't make a lot of sense for who I am and what I wanted to achieve. So right out of college, I got the job with ESPNW.
God, that's so cool. Kudos to you.
And then did you have to relocate or you stayed in Tampa doing
that?
Yeah,
so I was in Tampa and could work remotely, which was great. And I started a couple series, one called Captain's Corner that featured female captains of high school teams, and one called Power Players, which highlighted women who worked on the business side of sports. So interviewed women from all the major leagues and teams, and I appreciate that they sort of had faith in me and let me do that at such a young age. And, you know, then at night I would write a series called About Last Night that highlighted, you know, the night in sports and wrote it sort of for female sports fans. So I was writing all the time and editing. So it was kind of an around the clock job, but it was nice that I was able, at the time to do it from Tampa. And then there was a story they wanted me to do the weekend of the Super Bowl. It was in Dallas that year, of how much food was consumed at the Super Bowl every year. How much hot dogs, popcorn. I'm like, they know me well, right? I'm like, perfect. This is my forte.
I mean, chicken wings.
Yeah. Exactly. This is my greatest strength for sure is eating. So anyway, somehow the Friday of the Super Bowl, I managed to get in touch with the chef and all the people at Cowboys Stadium and wrote an article, and that kind of moved me into a little bit more of a full-time position with them. And then I had moved up to New York about a year after being with ESPNW, just to have a little, you know, different experience after being in Florida my whole life. And their offices were also headquartered up there.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So how long were you in that position?
Yeah, so I was with them from when I graduated in 2010 to about 2012. And while I was living in New York, I saw a job on Craigslist to do social media for Major League Baseball. I didn't even know if it was a real job.
like, why is the MLB posting on Craigslist?
Yeah, that's when you can trust Craigslist.
Exactly. I figured, okay, what do I have to lose? And turns out it was legit after all. So applied for the job. And at the time, it's kind of when social media was, you know, really coming, you know, into sort of normalcy, but companies weren't using it yet for marketing purposes. They were one of the first to, you know, really adapt it as a sports league, and they were one of the front runners. And so applied for the job, had to take a baseball test, which I didn't know was coming, but ended up...
What was that like? Oh, baseball
that
test.
That was nerve-wracking, yeah. So my
I think I would be pretty good at that. Yeah. I think I could do pretty good.
You'd be all right.
Unless I had to, like, give stats of players. Like,
how many outs
be...
are there? How many innings
yeah,
are there?
Yeah, any kind of
Did
rules.
You have to do all that?
So it's interesting. I walked in my second interview and they're like, here's your baseball test. I was like, my what? Okay, great. Here we go. And then everyone
Can
left
I
the
use
room.
My phone?
Yeah.
Right? Can I phone a friend?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, Google, please.
Right.
So it was a list of 30 names and I had to write a paragraph about each one. And
oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. No, some of them no. are well-known names.
Depends what team they are from. I only know my team, the guys from my teams that I follow.
Well, that's exactly right. And so some of them were really well-known names, so those were easy. But then the other half were sort of obscure up-and-comers, minor leaguers.
Take it up.
Yeah, so what I did was I flipped over the paper and I wrote each team and named at least one player who plays for each team. I'm like, well, I may not know this, but I will show them what I do know. And a lot of social media is kind of thinking outside the box and thinking on the fly, you know, so maybe they'll appreciate this approach. And I guess it worked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I still
Because most people would have panicked. Like, I probably would have panicked. I'm like, I don't know.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Right. Like, oh, God.
There wasn't bubbles?
Yeah, right? Like a Scantron.
Yeah, I remember one guy wrote, like, sounds Italian. I think that was my only, like, that was the only thing I could say about him on the paper, like, trying to make the best of it. So it
he sounds
brutal.
Cute.
Yeah,
no pictures.
No pictures.
Could have taken another approach to
right.
Yeah, when they called and said you got the job, I was like, really? Okay, well.
Which player did you think I
had? Yeah, what exactly was the passing score on this
right.
test?
I want to know what the curve, the grading curve is on that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So then you worked for them
I worked for
in New York.
in New York at their headquarters at MLB.com, and I covered every baseball game every night for 2 years. So
you tweet it's a lot Orioles. Of games.
Oh, my gosh.
So you tweet for every single team?
Yeah. So we basically had a big spreadsheet of the stuff we did for each team and what the team would handle, and then we'd be assigned different games every night, and you'd have a couple of them, and then one person was also in charge of the MLB account. So you'd tweet on the teams and tweet the updates and had to know what the teams wanted at any moment, and then was updating the MLB accounts at all times too. So I basically didn't go to the bathroom for 2 years.
For teams like sending requests, kind of what they wanted to put on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like who you want, they wanted you to highlight or certain players or certain things.
Now, send it out.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Now when, people say this is going to be fast paced, I'm like, don't worry, I got it. Like after I did that, I could do anything. Like,
right.
Because you have to be on top of what's happening in that moment for
real time.
Teams. Yeah.
In real time.
All at once. So it was a wild ride.
Wild ride going from Florida, layback Florida, in a big city.
Yeah, exactly. But I represented Tampa and the Rays well in that office.
So yeah.
Walked around as like number
That's
one.
That's awesome. Yeah. Don't tell Cindy though, I have MLB.com login. So anytime during the playoffs, when especially the Rays were in it, I would have it in the background. I was working and listening to the game.
Well, now that I'm here, that's part of your job. So we'll just have to factor that in.
Right.
Today we factored in drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. She told me about the luncheon extravaganza.
I need to chop
you guys, here. Right? Just tell Cindy. Bye. I'm for 50 cents margarita.
It was a 50 cent martinis at Epicure. And I said, oh, you guys stopped that. And they're like, oh, how did you know? I go, because I used to come here for lunch all the time and take advantage of it. Cindy's like, wait, during the word, like,
yeah,
sorry.
I just have bottles of vodka, whatever they need in the refrigerator.
So I don't have to leave.
No one leaves the office.
No one leaves the office.
Well, Michael went to offer a drink for tonight, but they said, oh, we're all out of wine.
We drank it all last week. Yeah. We're going to replenish the reserves.
Seems like there's no one has fun here.
When you walked in, I was throwing away a bottle of champagne that I drank. I'm like, who popped this open?
Yeah. Well, it's good to know. This is like the secret.
This is like every time you need to do a pit stop.
Who needs happy hour? I just put a breeze in.
Exactly.
MLB.com makes me laugh because I do have my login. I pay for it. I keep it every year, and it's like a yearly subscription, and I just keep paying for it because there's always that one game I really want to watch or something. I can watch it real time.
Baseball becomes like a best friend. There's so many games a year.
I can't keep track of all. That's why I'm one of those, like, usually September is when I really tune in, to see where we're at.
We're excited. We're getting to do the right
thing. Well, the worst part was, we worked from 6 p.m. to about 2 a.m. So, first of all, I moved to New York. I'm a Florida girl, and no one told me the sun set at like 4 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
So, I walked to work in the dark, and everyone's coming home. I'm like, this is so much change and so depressing. And then if a team on the West Coast went into extra innings, the Angels went into
17. Like 4 in the morning.
Yeah, I'd leave at like 4 or 5 in the morning, and I used to like Google what time does McDonald's start serving breakfast, because sometimes it's like almost morning by the time I left. So
thank God they serve it all day now.
Thank goodness. I know. I was like, where was that?
Or where was Uber Eats where you could just have it delivered so you didn't have to leave?
That would have been life changing.
Right? I say that all the time for so many different scenarios. Like even in college, of all the all nighters you pulled studying, like, where was Uber Eats when I needed it?
Right. And I don't know if you guys have been to Chelsea Market, but that's where the offices are located in New York. So it's like bakeries and there's a lobster place. And so at least we ate well when we were there during the day. Certainly no complaints about that.
That's awesome. Yeah. So then you were with MLB for how long?
So I was with them also for 2 years. So literally worked every night, weekend, and holiday. So I think, sometimes on social media, people see the great parts of a job and they are there, but it's kind of like an iceberg where most of the hard work is underwater and you can't see it. Then there's a little tip that you get to see, and maybe that's what you see on social media. But I feel like for years and years, I really grinded it out and did my time and worked at the most unattractive hours to kind of pursue the
dream. I can't imagine having a social life in New York City when you're working 6 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's interesting because it's hard to meet up with people because most people are not free at 4 in the morning.
to grab a bite to eat.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or we have to do a really early dinner.
Yeah. But at the same time, New York was the best place to do it because, there's activity around the clock. So you don't feel like you're necessarily working sort of in the dead of night. And there's lots of people that work in restaurant field and other jobs, Broadway and stuff. And so, other people work kind of shift hours too, so it was the perfect place to have that.
Right, that's true. And then
never sleeps.
Yeah,
right, it's so true.
I can confirm.
Right. Yeah. No. So then, where was your path take you after the FMLD?
Yeah, so this is where things get really interesting. So I was flying to, I think it was a wedding in November after I'd been at MLB for 2 years, and I was sitting at LaGuardia, and they have like iPads basically at every table at the gates. And first of all, I ordered a pizza to the gate because I thought that was the greatest thing of all time that you could do that. So they brought pizza to the gate. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? I eat this whole pizza. So I started reading the stories on the iPad, and they had the New York Times on there, and VaynerMedia was the first story. I'm like, okay, I'll read about this company. And I had never heard of Gary or Vayner until I saw that article. But the minute I read it, it was just this feeling like, I know this place is meant for me. I know this is where I belong. And how can I make this happen? It was just this like sudden jolt of like, I need to find a way to be connected to these people because they're meant to be in my life. And it's like, once you have that feeling, you're sort of relentless in pursuing every avenue to make it happen. So got on the plane, bought Wi-Fi, figured out Gary's email address and emailed him. I was like, hey, Gary, just read about you at gate D4 and I need to come work for you. And I'm super appreciative, knowing even how busy he was at the time, that he responded and didn't just delete the email. You know what I mean? Someone that big and that busy.
Or just give you a generic response. Right, like, thanks.
Right. I mean,
I'll keep in touch. I'll let you know.
How many years ago was that?
So that was in 2000. It was the end, I believe, of 2013. No, let me think for a second. It was the end of... Okay, so I went to work for him in 2014. So I think it was the end of 2013. And I think, you know, I went in for my interview at the beginning of 2014.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think in this day and age, a lot of people don't even email back. I mean, the fact that he wrote back and he took the time to read it and write a personal response. I mean, he is the top of the top, and he gave someone who is at the bottom of the totem pole a chance, which is, mm-hmm. I think,
or at least the time of day.
Was it an internship or was it a job?
Interesting. So I came in to Vayner for 2 interviews, and it's cool. They have other people at the company do the interviews, so mm-hmm. they want to make sure you're fit with the culture. So I came in for the first interview and it was great, and then called back for a second one, and they told me at the time, you know, we kind of do a rolling interview process, so you know, we'll have you come in and get to know you, you know, and if you're fit, we'll let you know when a position becomes available. So I thought, okay, I'll go back to MLB and I'm probably not gonna hear from them for 6 months maybe.
Years.
And, yeah, exactly. And literally the next day I got a call and an email from them offering me a job for an even higher position than I had interviewed for. So it was a job.
Wow, what was the job? What was the title?
Yeah, so I interviewed for an account executive role and they offered me the title of senior account executive. Ooh. And I was like, it says a lot about this place and just their culture in general that, you know, they wanted to go above and beyond and give me something even better than what I had interviewed for initially.
They had seen that potential and your experience.
Yeah. I always say that Gary always made me feel like I was the one he was waiting for, which I had never felt in a boss before. Like I always, you know, up until that point, you don't know any differently. I was taking a job. I wanted to be at the company. I was excited about the responsibilities, but Gary was the first boss who went above and beyond to make me feel like he was really excited that I was there.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
I can see how you are special and you can feel that, you know, you're a lot like his mentality. I think, I don't know him, of course, but just listening to him on a daily basis several times a day, you know, he talks about that culture and how important it is. And he talks about being authentic.
Yep.
And I don't know. I think those were your traits. I don't think you learned those traits from him. And I
think
he saw that.
I appreciate that. I hope so. I mean, all you want to do is make him proud because he does so much for you in return. And I think, you know, on a lot of his podcasts and the public stuff he does, people hear his excitement and life lessons. But he's, you know, the part that I feel like they don't get to see is just how loving he is to people one-on-one and how much those qualities are even more expanded when you see him in person and are part of his company. Yeah. I mean, he really takes the time to work with you on things and, you know, to care about you personally and to understand what matters to you and what's going on in your life. And I always say he's the greatest teacher I've ever had because the life lessons that he taught there, I use every day and I've applied to both work and my personal life. And I think in a lot of ways too, he also was one of the first people who really kind of validated my life and taught me about EQ and emotional intelligence. Like I'd never heard those terms before. And not only that, I didn't know there could be someone who valued them. And so he really, you know, made me feel this sort of sense of belonging and showed me what I deserve, which I hadn't seen in a lot of people.
Now, when you say when you say that, what do you feel like when you take away like one thing that you feel like was the biggest life lesson that you learned through him and working there?
There are a few things. I mean, I think take the high road, because you have to apply that to everything that you do in life. You know, no matter how people make you feel, try to just smile through it. That's what leaders do, and you never know when they'll come back in your life again. 99.9% of things don't matter. So, you know, the stuff that brings us down or makes us upset on a daily basis, if we can just let it go and probably a week or even a day, it won't matter anymore. And go all in on your strengths. You know, I think you don't really have that kind of teaching from the typical school system. You know, they, you know, say this is one type of intelligence and this is what success means. And he really taught there's like different types of success. And so I think that one piece of advice really has given a lot of people a place in the world and an unwavering belief in themselves.
Yeah, I love that he talks about the education right now, and that if you don't have a real thing that you go into school for a purpose, like, right. Why are you doing that?
Exactly.
Like, the other day he was talking about it, and he goes, why are you going to go get a college degree now? You're like 25. What are you going to do with it?
Right.
Except be in debt. And yeah. I love when he says that, because I feel like things have changed that much.
Without a doubt, yeah. And I ended up in a couple jobs after Banner, which we'll get to, working for a guy named Brandon Marshall, who is an NFL wide receiver. And he started a mental health foundation. And we would go around the country and do suicide prevention trainings. And I think between what I learned from Gary and what I learned from Brandon is that we're kind of just completely messing up with kids, and we're not making them feel good about themselves. And that's contributing to sort of the mental health crisis that we're having. And granted, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychiatrist, and there are other factors that go into it.
Suicide.
It's terrible. But, you know, at a very young age, we're telling kids that they're a failure if they don't succeed in one way of getting A's in these subjects that they may never use again. And instead, I really think we'd make a big difference in the world if we figured out who the kid was, you know, pretty early on, and said, based on, you know, your personality, these are some areas we think you'd excel, and kind of put them on a little more of a personalized path. I think that would make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
I wish that was around for me, because I feel like I wasted a lot of time in college just taking classes and not really doing anything.
Did you
anything.
Even know you could go into events?
No, I didn't even know. I wanted to go in events. I had no clue at the time. And like most college kids, you don't really know unless you're like, I'm going to be a lawyer and this is the path I'm going to take, or I'm going to be a doctor or a nurse and go into nursing school.
Yeah.
But if you're in marketing or communications or business even, like, you know,
there's so many different directions. Someone's helping.
Yeah.
This entrepreneurship program that has gone crazy across the country is, I think, the best thing that...
I completely agree. And just having other, you know, options. Like, I mean, I think there are schools now even doing, you know, journalism, and, you know, you can be on TV or radio or any of those things. I mean, that didn't exist, and that would have even been a small piece for me that would have been really helpful. Okay, there is something that you could be passionate about. You know, I remember early on in school saying, you know, okay, this is what they're teaching me, and it seems like I can only be a few things, but all the people I know have all these different jobs, so why is there this disconnect? We aren't really learning about these possibilities. And then when I got to VaynerMedia, and Gary cared most about EQ and how people got along with each other, and he felt people who could read people really well did better in business settings. So I found the person I want to work for more than anything else, and he's prioritizing this thing that no one even mentioned to me until I, you know, was in my late 20s and got to this company. You know, how did we miss that?
Right. Yeah. That's what we said. I think sociology was like one of the best classes I took in college, because it did help me learn how to be like much more of a diplomatic person in business, and how to understand people and in communication with different personalities.
Yeah, absolutely.
But not that I went into that field or anything. It was just one class that I felt like really stood out in my mind as that I've applied my whole life.
Right.
I wish I knew all about this, because I probably wouldn't have gone to college.
Really?
I struggled. It was so hard because I'm a little dyslexic.
Yep.
And that's why she's my right arm, and I can't even say her last
but
name correctly.
No one can say my last name correctly.
But I get very, so I appreciate the support that I just got from you guys. Just try it one more time, you know, because I do well off the cuff, not having a script. As soon as I get a script or anything in front of me is when
that's
I start
not your
getting,
natural.
It's not my natural.
Yeah.
So
How did you get into events?
Oh gosh. You know, my husband was a musician, and I, for my part of it, I started at Busch Gardens.
I had my bar mitzvah there.
started at Busch Gardens in a brownie uniform, working in the restaurant side of it. And I knew that's not what I wanted to do. And then I saw these two women walking through the park who said, what are y'all doing? And go, well, we're selling the park at nights. You know, it's closed at 5:30. We're trying to talk these people into, like, let's have an event space. So I wanted to do that. And then I went to interview with the person. They said they wanted me. These two fabulous friends wanted me. And they sent me to their boss to have an interview. And he looked at me and he was like, what are you going to know what to do? You work in the smokehouse. And right. I went, really? Really?
Yeah.
So I didn't get that job. And then I decided just to look for my passion and got into the hotel industry. I had no desire to own my own business. I didn't even know that existed. I was totally happy working for corporate America. And then one day my husband's a musician and he just said, hey, I went on maternity leave. He said, hey, let's start an entertainment agency. I go, what's that? I got to go to New York.
Right.
I got to figure it all out. I got to do business planning. He goes, oh no, because he's street smart. My husband's like, you know, you don't do that. You just do you.
Right.
I go, do me. He goes, yeah, just do you. And then that's what we did.
Yeah, it was 30. Like those magic words changed everything. Yeah. And we forget to say that to people.
Yeah. And then of course I have that mother that probably I don't know. But my mother was like, you can do anything. Like she never.
My parents were that way too.
She was like, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. You can do that. You know, my mother, all she wanted her children to do is have fun.
Yeah.
Honestly, God, that's all she ever said. I want you to have fun. And, you know, they came from an era that they didn't have a lot. Yep. And her family was, you know, struggled. Her father was a shoemaker. And she just said, I just want you to have fun. Go have fun. And here we are. We're ambassadors of fun.
So. Yeah, that's amazing. And I think I feel super lucky because without my parents, certainly none of this would have been possible because they were the same way. They've been married 42 years. They're literally the best people I know. And they didn't have any set, you know, ideas of what they wanted their kids to be. They said, whoever you are, you know, as long as you're happy, we'll support that. And they've meant it every step of the way. Even way back when I told them I was going to be a sideline reporter on Monday Night Football, you know, they didn't deter me in any way. And I think I've been able to pursue my path because they've completely given me the space to be exactly who I am.
And it's so important. I think that's awesome too, that you see that. It was reconfirmed with Gary's philosophy when you got in there, so you can pay it forward to people that you're working with and athletes that don't know their worth, except they think on the field.
Right. And I always say the best gift you can give someone is total acceptance of exactly who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I really like helping people find their place in the world, and I know what it was like for me going to school, and I know how Gary completely changed my life. And, you know, at first I thought, okay, this really mostly applies to kids, but, you know, I had this passion for sports, and it's really funny because now I've kind of realized that's exactly what I'm doing for athletes. And, you know, a lot of people probably wouldn't realize that they need assistance, but, you know, they've only grown up their entire lives and, you know, playing whatever sport they're in. And, you know, that's all they know. And they're really great at it, but no one's sort of given them the guidance or the help outside of that realm. And you never know when it could end. I mean, you could get a call that, okay, today's your last day and, you know, you're cut. And
Or you have that, that game injury, career-ending injury, and then they're done.
They focus so much on getting to where they are today with their career practice and everything like that. That
they don't know anything outside.
Know anything else.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I'm really interested in hearing what you actually are doing for these athletes.
Tell us a little bit about Social Victors.
Sure. So it started out as sort of really marketing and social media, and I, you know, help them build their brand. So that's kind of using the latest technology, helping them with social media. I have, you know, website, podcast, graphic design, any sort of marketing capabilities that they need, I can help partner with them with. But, you know, it was really just for a little bit of time that it was just focused on marketing. It's kind of expanded. Now I say I help them become the best versions of themselves, because you realize that a lot of times they come to cities where they don't necessarily know anyone, and, you know, they need help, you know, with day-to-day life. I mean, my Bucks player, I renovated his entire house. First I helped him, I introduced him to a real estate agent, helped him buy a house, and then I renovated the whole thing. And, you know, I end up, you know, picking out gifts for family members or, you know, whatever they need. And a lot of it has become helping to introduce them to people in the field in which they're passionate. So, you know, I've won Bucks player Cam Lynch, who's super into broadcasting, and he's amazing because he spent, you know, all of his free time either doing stuff in the community, but he's had internships with the Players Tribune, Fox Sports, a radio station down here in Tampa, the NFL. So they have to sort of be entrepreneurial and leaders themselves and kind of see the greater picture, because if they're not those type of superstars, I can't do much to help them if they're not interested in using their time wisely. But once, you know, we sort of pair up, I help them figure out what it is that they love doing. And more than that, figuring out who they are, who they want to be in this world, what they want their legacy to be, and then how we can help bring that to life.
And how are these players finding you? Like, how do they know that you are here to help them?
Sure. So a lot of it has been word of mouth. So for example, Cam Lynch with the Bucks, pretty funny story. And not only is he like the most amazing guy, he came over for Thanksgiving with my family. Like, I mean, they become family pretty quickly. And I always say that the people I work with, they're so amazing that they've made me better people. They've made me a better person, I'm sorry, because they're just such extraordinary people. But so Cam had an internship at a radio station here and was talking on the radio about how he was looking for a marketing person, and someone who followed me on Twitter and knew what I did connected Cam and I on Twitter and said, I think Whitney does this, and I heard on the radio you're looking for this kind of help. So we paired up, and it's kind of amazing he was willing to meet me in person, knowing how busy their schedules are and sort of trusting the internet. And, you know, we met, and I'm pretty sure he says that when we met in person, we went to Penny Rustica, and I ordered a whole pizza, and he was like, I knew this was the girl for me.
You're like, and that's for me. What would you like to have?
He's exactly. Like, yeah, this is my kind of girl.
Yeah, I think they're like, oh, good, someone who eats as much as we do. This is perfect. So, yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, it's been great. And
so you help him, and then he might know somebody, sure, or old teammate,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, word sort of gets out. And, you know, like Gary says, I document what I'm doing, and people can kind of see the type of work I'm doing. And then if there are speaking engagements or other opportunities, they can tell that's the kind of stuff I do. And they just ask. And it's like, you put what you do out there, mm-hmm, and then if people have needs, they'll come to you. You know, and I think having a niche really helps.
Yeah, that it's a very specific niche.
Yeah,
too, you know,
kind of become the sports person. And I recently got certified by the NFL as one of their marketing agents. So that's exciting. So I can officially do deals with them for the players that I work with. And when players introduce me, they tend to say I'm their chief marketing officer.
Oh,
so that's
cool.
Kind of the role that, yeah, I've been given. Yeah.
And what kind of credentials did you have to get certified? What did that take for you?
They just had to say, this is my girl.
An actual NFL player is like, you can talk to my girl.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting.
You can call my people.
Yeah, exactly.
And people can talk to your people.
Yeah, and it's interesting because to be an actual agent for players, you need to have a graduate degree. And then you need to pass the test. And so I think people assume that that is the only way to represent players. But I'm hopeful I've kind of showed them this new path where you can help them build their brands. I mean, you know, they have agents, but the agents do the contracts, and the teams have marketing people, but no one is really doing it for the individual player. And when you do that, it helps everyone.
Yeah.
So I kind of realized that there was this niche, and, you know, you don't need all of that extra schooling and testing. You can kind of just jump in and start doing this. And when it comes to being certified by the NFL, we both had to say, you know, and they had to verify this is the person who does sort of my marketing deals and
make sure you're legit.
Yeah, exactly. they had to verify me, but after that, and one of the new things I've started doing is helping to get players verified on social media. So everyone wants to be verified on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And so I've reached out and made contacts there, and have been able to get people.
What do you mean by verified? I don't know what that means.
So, you know, like the blue check?
Yeah.
Okay, so for some of the athletes I work with who don't have it but who are deserving of it, I can submit them. And
based on like following and who they are. And
yeah, exactly, to verify that they're a public figure. And that's a big deal to them, because if you're looking for a sponsorship deal or to get picked up by a team, and, you know, people are looking at their social media profiles, you know, to bring them in, it instantly gives the perception that they are a celebrity and a big deal.
So credibility.
It's something to help their overall brand. So again, I'm not as much thinking about terms and big categories. I'm like, what is the greatest need at this moment, and how can I make it happen? Mm-hmm. And that's what I do to help them build their brand.
That's really cool. Do they come to you like knowing this is where I want to go, or do you help kind of almost build like a business plan for them?
Yeah, I mean, it's for sure teamwork. It's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a flower budding. That's the way we, you know, they have a need when they first come to me. But once I get to know who they are and what they want to achieve, I'm usually coming to them with ideas. They're bouncing ideas off me. So the path we end up taking is usually unexpected and uncharted. And It's like we continue to build on what we're doing together, and amazing things tend to come from that.
Just happen.
Yeah.
Organically. Because that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You get to know them. and what will be good for them,
sure,
based on what their heart's telling them to
That's
do.
That's exactly right. And it's like, so for example, Cam was picked as one of four players during the Super Bowl this year out of like 200 who applied to broadcast Super Bowl week for the NFL, and he got to actually broadcast the actual game to the UK, which is
That's really cool.
It's awesome, and I give him so much credit because he'd never broadcast a game before. So how about have your first one be the Super Bowl?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Go big or go home.
International broadcast.
Exactly.
Your role came in maybe helping him with the applications.
So he did it all himself. He's super amazing, and he brought me with him, you know. And that's the thing, is like, we really take care of each other, and I feel like they pay it back to me 100 times what I ever do for them. So he brought me with him, and you know, we did all the radio interviews together, and you know, went throughout the week together, all the events, and I tried to capture the stuff he was doing on social media, and you know, help with the fans and do whatever I could to make that week the best it could be. And my Jets
and
player,
keep the fans and engaged in what he's doing, and all the cool stuff that he was involved
in, to try and capture, you know, he's busy doing all of the cool stuff. So I was there to be able to capture it or add in things or help facilitate things, kind of, you know, be the right-hand person to help fill in the gaps where he wasn't able to, and help get my Jets player an opportunity to do autographs at the main stage and NFL experience. And so they both had presences there, which was super awesome because it's
amazing.
The biggest.
Who's your Jet player?
His name's Brandon Copeland.
Okay.
He's a linebacker. And he's awesome. So he is a professor at Penn, where he graduated from. Yeah, he's teaching financial literacy. I'm like, can I please take your class?
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah,
so he plays football and he's a teacher?
Yes, I think he's the first active
NFL player. Talk about overachieving. Yeah. My goodness.
Well, that's the thing. You see these guys and you're like, well, what am I doing
with my life? Right? Now I need to, like, get another job, go back to school,
right,
and do something.
And Brandon only lives on 15% of his salary, which is actually super interesting. Not only is he disciplined, but he helps talk to kids about saying no to peer pressure, because, you know, it's easy to get wrapped up in that world where everyone's buying new expensive toys and wanting to be accepted. And
he should be doing that for all the players.
And he said he'll stand in front of the mirror and just practice saying no. Like, he knows what's best for himself, and he has family.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
People probably reach out all over wanting money.
Oh,
and he wants
things.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you just never know. And that, like you said, that
when it's going to end. When that income stops coming in.
Right. And he also started a real estate company where he flips houses, and actually Sports Illustrated did a story on him, and he went to pull out the plan for the house, and he pulled out the game plan for the Philadelphia Eagles, and that was probably the first time they ever had that happen.
Oh, you better hide that.
Exactly, which is pretty hilarious. And it's like, you know, he's flipping houses on the side to make, so the people that I work with, I'd say, you know, have a really good handle on the fact that, you know, sports isn't going to be forever. And I always tell them, you know, a lot of people define themselves by the sports that they play, but instead of seeing football as your purpose, can you see it as your platform to your purpose? And I think that's what they're all doing. They're maximizing the time that they're playing to chart out the rest of their lives.
That's awesome.
It's amazing. Yeah. Now, I know that Gary V started a sports agency. Is there any way that you two can collaborate and there are two different sides that you do? Or?
So, you know, you never know. I mean, I definitely, it's pretty funny. I introduced Brandon Copeland to Gary when Brandon was with the Lions. I just had a feeling that they would hit it off. And it's funny because they did a podcast together. And I remember on it, Gary said, I have all these people that, you know, executives and stuff that reach out to me and, you know, that want to meet with me. He's like, I just don't have the time, but I'll always say yes to anyone Whitney sends my way. So it was like that moment. I was like,
that was one of my questions, is do you still stay in contact with Gary?
Yeah. So he's slightly more popular than I am, I would say. So it's not as easy.
I don't know about that. Not
Tim. You're like, my female Gary B.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you very much. In fact, when he came to speak down here last February, I think, you know, they had like 60 VIP seats reserved for him. And I just kept sending names of people I wanted to bring. I think we took up 45 of the 60 seats. So he's just been so good to me, and I'm so appreciative. And I can't believe all that he's done and continues to do, considering what a big deal he is. So I got to see him at the Super Bowl, which was great, but you know, he's so busy and doing so many big things. I mean, the Minnesota Timberwolves put him on their Twitter earlier this week, you know, pictures with all their players, and so he just has so much going on.
He saw you in the crowd. I was on that podcast. He was doing live for
the
4 hours
Super Bowl podcast.
And my goodness, are you really listening to that? I said, yeah, it's just super cool to watch this.
Very organic, just kind
very
of conversation.
It just happens, and all of a sudden he goes, hey, Whitney!
That
and
is
I went,
hilarious.
Oh, Whitney!
We know her!
It's
so funny. What is
and then you introduced him to
Cam Wish.
Yeah,
yeah. was this little area at the Super Bowl and you needed sort of a press pass to get in. We had one. I don't know if it was the right one, but I just showed it quickly and, you know, we ran in. And the best part, too, was there were other employees from Boehner there, and that place was like a family for me. So I got to see them and reconnect. Aww, and then I got to talk to Gary. And it's just, you know, he means so much to me and I love him so dearly and he's so busy now. So those moments where I get to really see him and catch up, and he follows me on Instagram, and, you know, I mean, he's still... has that.
That's when you know you've made it when Gary Vee is following you on Instagram.
I don't know. I'm still like, you know, I'm waiting for him to sign my book.
She keeps sliding into his DMs, so she's waying for him to respond one of these days.
No, he's probably saying, you haven't done it enough.
Right.
And then it was really nice. Vayner, you know, he has Vayner Sports, and even though we do a lot of similar things, it's like, he means it when he says family first. You know, he puts any sort of competition or, you know, overriding, you know, if there are crossovers and what we do aside, and it's just kind of, you know, being together and supporting the other person. So went to his Vayner Sports party at the Super Bowl, and that was amazing and really cool, and got to bring my athletes there and, you know, got to meet some of his and see all that he's done. And it's just amazing that everything that he's involved in is like the biggest deal ever. Like, most people go to this party and say, this Vayner Sports is like the coolest thing you've ever created, and that would be it for them. But that's just like one thing.
One small thing.
That was one night. Yeah, exactly. Probably 10 meetings on the way there. Yeah. So it's great and pretty funny now. I mean, when I started this company, you know, I worked at some big name places, and, you know, I kind of thought, well, I've done the big name stuff, and, you know, having those names is how, you know, been my gateway to things. So now that I'm starting my own thing, you know, I'll get to do what I love and I'll be really happy. But I never thought what I would do would allow me to be in the same place as Gary. You know, in some ways, that's a really cool moment.
Did you think about it? Was there like a time that you said, okay, now, like, he tells you, like, as soon as you can afford to do it on your own, you go.
Yeah.
Like, or did you just take a leap of faith and or didn't even know you were going to do it?
Yeah. Well, probably all those things.
All of them.
YOLO. So I always tell people, like, create a list of the things that matter the most to you, and like, tune everyone else out because you're the first you. You can't mess this up, and only you know what's best for you. So I knew I wanted to live in Tampa, be near my family, and be my own boss, make my own schedule. And when I kind of looked at that set of criteria, the only thing that really fit all of those qualities was starting your own company. Mm-hmm. But you're not like, okay, I'm gonna go do this. You know, that sounds like a scary, overwhelming idea. And the idea of giving up a paycheck definitely still is scary and overwhelming. But I kind of had two starts to Social Victories. The first was when I was at Rise, we were having a bunch of changes in CEOs, and I had just signed a lease back in New York. Rise is the racial equality nonprofit, mm-hmm. and loved it there and did great work. And we could have four more podcast episodes on that job because it was so life-changing. Yeah. But I thought, okay, well, if for some reason a new CEO comes in and doesn't want me here, you know, and has their own people, well, I have to think of something to do to be able to pay my rent. I just signed a year lease in New York. Of course, pretty much the most
very expensive.
Of all places.
Right.
I mean, I think some of the greatest moments come from transition times and dead ends, and you don't have another choice, or you're kind of stuck and you're like, well, this is what I can do within my power to try and make this moment better. So, I remember a friend asked me to come to his agency and help teach his company about social media. And I remember the CMO or the marketing person was like, is the website the same as social media? I was like, oh boy. Like,
clearly,
they are in trouble.
Yeah, if they're asking me, there's people that need help. And they said, you know, one of our clients, you know, Phil Mickelson, do you think you could do a social media game plan for them? And I'm like, for him? And I said, well, you know, yeah, sure. So basically, I went home from there. I'm like, I'll start my own company. Here we go. And, you know, wrote back to them and said, yeah, here, I'm happy to help. I have my own company now.
Here's the invoice to do this work for you.
I literally Googled like invoices and social media contracts. I mean, I had to figure it out all on my own. But at that night at that meeting, I did not have a company. And I was like, you know, told them I'm happy to do it. I'm like, by the time I got home, I had a company. So
how'd you come up with the name?
It just started, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. At first, I was going to use possibly my name, and you just start playing around. And I really wanted it to point to the fact that it started, and the crux of it was really social media, and that's what I love doing. Thanks. And I wanted the sports tie-in, and I thought social victories was a really good way to talk about just wins in general, but it also kind of a little bit laddered back
into the social media. I live every day with moral victories.
Yeah.
And the social victories.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Really touches.
Yeah, and social victories also, it's just like winning with people, which is just like the whole, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of meanings behind social victories. It could be kind of read different ways.
And one lesson I learned is at the time I looked up to make sure no one had taken the website, but I didn't even look to see, you know, or is the Twitter handle available, Instagram, and luckily they were. I grabbed it, but you know, it's something I tell people, like, before you start a company, make sure you can grab the names everywhere. Yeah. Because what do you do with a company and someone else has the Instagram name? You're pretty much out of luck.
Yeah.
So I started it and Phil Mickelson, first client, which was probably unexpected. So I did a whole social media gig. Yeah, exactly. And it was, I remember it took me like 30 hours and it was 18 pages and handed it over. So I was doing stuff on the side, and that was August of 2016. And then, so I was working for Rise. Then I became the first chief marketing officer for one NFL player, Brandon Marshall, and did that and worked for his mental health foundation. And at that time, I moved back to Tampa. And after a year of doing that, it was just, we weren't sure where Brandon's career was going to head. And he had gotten hurt earlier that season and didn't necessarily need a full-time person if he wasn't playing anymore. So talked to him about it. And he had always supported the idea, even when I was working for him. He allowed me to do whatever I wanted on the side, which was really nice. And then I remember January 9th of last year, I decided, okay, you know, I'm going to do this full-time. And I say, January 10th, I ate pizza and cried all day. Like, what did I just do? And then from January 11th on, it's been nonstop busy. And like, it just goes to show that when, you know, you're meant to do something and you know you're doing exactly what you should be doing in life, it works out. It's like following your heart. And you have a lot of hard days and hard moments. I don't want to gloss over that. I mean, there's tears, there's disappointments, there's shocks, there's learnings, all of those things. And, you know, I think it's important to mention those because they're normal. Mm-hmm. But overall, the happiness and the excitement, how you feel on a day-to-day basis, it's kind of like that finding your soulmate. Yeah, you're like, this is what I want forever.
Have you taken on some support staff, or are you doing this all solo?
Yeah, so I had an intern this year, which was the first time I had anyone help me with anything, and so that was great.
Find it hard letting go and letting them do things, or were you like,
I'm so happy to
fly, butterfly, fly?
Exactly. Give experience, and I want, you know, to help out when I can. You know, sometimes athletes have different stuff that comes up, and I want to give kids the chance the way people gave it to me. So, you know, I have a lot of people who've been interested, and, you know, I do the best I can to create opportunities for people to get involved. But, you know, a lot of what I do is really, I stay organized and, you know, it's time management. And a lot of the work I do, similar to, you know, a typical agent, is, you know, they're looking for me to be there. You know, I enjoy doing the deals. I enjoy being a part of it. And then when it comes to fruition, I can't just really send someone else, you know. I am sort of the company, but there are certain things, you know, where I can have other people help out. And I try to utilize
try to
them.
Teach them how to do some social media.
Yeah. But I really try to do things on sort of a project or block them off my calendar to say, okay, this day or this time, this is exactly what I'm doing. I'm going to be there. And then that person gets that time. That client gets that time. And then, you know, I just have to schedule other things around it. So that's kind of how I manage it. I enjoy that because it means every day is different and I'm really happy kind of living in that cadence.
Yeah. Didn't you take a big trip this year? Last year?
Yeah. So I went to Thailand for 2 weeks.
That looked amazing.
Thank you.
All of our entrepreneurs are taking these big trips. We need to get on the bandwagon here.
Honestly, I'm like, if I don't do the things that make me unhappy, that make me happy in life and that I love doing, what the heck is the point of working for yourself? Oh, you know, if you're not putting yourself first. Even today, it was a beautiful day and I went to Armature Works for lunch and just took a few minutes and sat outside and did the emails. And I'm like, Mondays don't have to be bad. Like, this is the best part of working for yourself. And I think that you are just not the best version of yourself and you can't give to other people when you don't take the time for yourself. And regardless, I'm unapologetic about it. Like, this is my business. This is what I want to do. And I like working with good things and good people. And those people respect what's best for you. And if anyone's making you feel less than that, they're not a fit. Like, get rid of them.
And it's amazing we talk about that we've set ourselves up even here at Breezen to be able to work remote. If, you know, when something happens, you know, it's no longer that there's no reason you can't. Yeah, you
right.
know,
so. I was literally doing
yeah,
deals.
Sitting in traffic for an hour in the morning.
Yeah, we just
throw you on the edge.
So, right. You know, yeah, and I mean, I think that's important for kids to know too, growing up, and other people who are listening. Like, I don't know who decided Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 are the only hours you can have a job, and why people think if they don't work those hours that you're wrong or you've messed up. Like, I'm here to tell you, like, you sometimes I work at 2 in the morning, sometimes I'm, you know, run on the Bayshore at 10 a.m. And, you know, it's, I always say you have to address what's most pressing
priorities.
At the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no work-life balance, that's garbage. But you have to address what you need most at that moment. Sometimes it's going to be work, and sometimes that's going to be, you know, stuff for yourself, mm-hmm. and you need to do what's best for your soul. And that's the way that you should kind of figure out your schedule. And granted, there's some roles you need hours, you know, certain hours and set hours, but it doesn't have to be that way. And I think
all
that's important
time,
for
no.
people to know.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, in our industry, in the event industry, it's, I mean, everyone you talk to, we all have the huge struggle of the work-life balance.
Yeah.
It's just...
How do you guys do it with events?
You just don't.
It's like when I was at MLB, you work when everyone else doesn't.
Yeah. Exactly. It's got to be... It has to be your passion.
Yep.
You have to love it.
It's a constant struggle.
I try to teach you that there is... You sometimes create some of it yourself.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you want to be there. You want to do the best for your clients and stuff. And we've gotten with social media, with the phones that people expect instantaneously.
Like constant, the constant response back.
And I just tell her, listen, not anymore. My philosophy in life has changed, you know, in business 30 years in regards to, Jet, I tell her, it can wait. Nothing is life-threatening that we have to pick up that phone right now.
Yeah,
nothing
that's
is life-threatening.
But anyone, it's not just me. I mean, everyone in our industry, and you've helped it through the years. It's just there's no...
And then people get nasty. They get this.
Yeah,
they
it's
get
just
nasty
a
on
7 days
you know,
a
like,
week kind
I
of thing.
I called you, like, yeah, when 20 seconds ago?
Yeah, right. I always say hurt people. And so if anyone is anything less than wonderful and kind to you, they probably don't feel good about themselves, number one. And when I was at MLB, I used to say the same thing. Are we doing brain surgery? Is anyone dying? And if not, then this isn't an emergency. And let's keep it in perspective. 99.9% of things don't matter. And I've had a role in my own business and in my life. I really started this when I went full-time with Social Victors, where I say I allow 0% toxicity in my life. You know, the best part of being your own boss is you get to fill your day with good things and good people. And if someone is mistreating you or being unkind or making you feel less than, they're not a fit for you and they're not going to be healthy for you. That's a toxic situation and it's addition by subtraction. You have to say goodbye, detach,
see
let them
later,
go.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem doing that and I usually feel so good after I do.
There's been a few times, especially on the wedding side, you know, with these brides, everything is an emergency and everything is what it's falls into that 1% that's in most important and whatever when it, you know, it's not. So it's hard like navigating through that. But there are times where, you know, Cindy's like, I don't think they're a good fit for us. Like, you know, it's okay to fire a client.
Yeah,
it's okay to say, I just don't think this is going to work out.
And how do you feel after you do it?
I feel it's best for the team. I feel like, you know, we work too hard. I'd rather make a little bit of money and have joy.
Right.
If I like to make a lot of money and have that joy, but if someone thinks they're going to own us or disrespect my team.
Right.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Not going to happen.
And they do more damage than they do good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true.
Sure.
So true.
But this has been, I could talk to you for hours.
I know. Seriously, I have so many more questions.
Yeah.
What do you see the next like year looking like for you and your company? Like, where do you want it to grow?
Okay, this is the truest answer I can give. And there's a lot of things I'm sure on in life. But, you know, I have no idea what the future holds. I mean, last year I ended up on an 18,000 square foot billboard on the Las Vegas Strip. So how could I have predicted that? And, you know,
you can only go up from
right
there, huh?
This year, I went out to San Antonio for 3 days to the new Alliance of American Football, their training camp, and got to present to every single football team in the league, which was a dream come true. But I could have never known that was going to be a possibility or that Cam was going to bring me to the Super Bowl. So I always say that kind of what the future holds is a little bit like a spouse. Like, can't predict it, but you just know it when you see it, and you have to know yourself well enough to know what you want to have in your life kind of at every turning point.
Yeah.
So I would really love to continue, spend as much time with family, you know, love being in Tampa, also love traveling, so all of those things. And then work-wise, like, I really want to continue to be this chief marketing officer role for as many athletes and as many sports entities as possible.
And what so like, cool. You know, we have a lot of entrepreneurs that are going to be listening, yeah. And, you know, it was an entrepreneur edition with the magazine. What would be like the one piece of solid advice for an entrepreneur in any industry that you honestly could give that you feel like you wish maybe you would have gotten sooner?
Honestly, have an unwavering belief in yourself. Like, it's something that you're constantly challenged with and have to remind yourself of on a minute-by-minute basis and multiple times a day. But, you know, everyone sort of knows what they're meant for and what's best for them, but the people around them can't feel that or, you know, can't necessarily understand it at the time. I remember I was speaking to a high school class and a kid said to me, "Have you always been entrepreneurial?" And I said, "Well, they only call it that when it works. When you're going left and everyone else is going right, they think you're a screw-up." And to be able to have the tunnel vision to tune everyone else out, especially people who are close to you and who, you know, your well-being affects them, you know, I think it's really important to have that confidence in who you are and the path that you want to pursue.
That's great advice.
That's great advice. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Well, thank you so much.
This was great.
This was awesome.
Yeah, when's chapter two?
Right? I know.
We're going to find some way to put you in our next edition.
Right?
Once football season comes around, yeah. We'll get you back.
I actually have a really funny story about that magazine. I'll have to send you guys a picture. But, you know, that was the coolest thing to be at that event, and Gary's on the cover, and the whole thing was so nice to include me, and I loved writing the article. So I asked my mom if she could get it framed for me, because she goes to the framing place all the time. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll get this, you know, 8 by 8.5 by 11, you know, picture and put it on the wall, it'll look great. She walks in with this framed thing that is taller than I am.
Oh my God. You have to take a picture and send it to us. I'd love to see that. That's hilarious. Yeah, they're just so, moms are just so proud.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And, like, she could barely carry a bell cart. It's hanging on my wall. It looks like it should be in a museum somewhere because it's so huge, but it was hilarious because I thought I was getting, you know, a typical, you know,
like a regular, like, you know,
dresser, and no, she comes in with
giant
a
piece of art.
Go big or go home.
So you guys, I see you every morning. You have a very prominent place in my house. In fact,
thank you. Is your office out of your house?
Yes, it is, which is great.
Yeah, that's
it's
awesome.
Out of my house and out of Wi-Fi on planes.
Gotcha.
So, you can work anywhere.
Exactly. You can work anywhere, yeah. And that's the beauty of what you're doing.
And the technology.
So we wish you the best of luck. We can't wait to hear the next chapter of your life.
And so supportive and believing. You can't do anything without people who believe in you, and you guys have always been that.
And, definitely. You know, I felt connected from you that afternoon that we met, and I wish you the best.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Have a breezin' day.